Working hard is worth it if you're seeing results. And when it comes to working out, the same thing is true. You want the maximum benefit in the time you have, and that's exactly what Tonal is built for. And with their latest iteration, Tonal 2, you can ensure your workout is more tailored and effective than ever. Tonal's at-home strength training system uses adaptive weight to learn from your movement and set the optimal weight for every move, adjusting in one-pound increments up to 250 pounds, challenging even the most advanced users to push their limits. You can also experience a full body burn with the new Aero HIIT workouts, the perfect blend of heart-pumping cardio and strength. Plus, the new built-in Smart View leverages a high-resolution camera that lets you see yourself during your workout, analyzes your movement, and provides real-time coaching, just like a personal trainer. Right now, Tonal is offering our listeners $200 off your Tonal purchase with promo code 200TONAL. That's Tonal.com and use promo code 200TONAL for $200 off your purchase. That's Tonal.com. Promo code 200TONAL for $200 off.
Why are brand new pickup trucks so expensive?
This is a question that we see on our videos all the time, and we also got an email from a viewer recently asking us to do a video about this exact question.
So we decided not just do a video, how about we do an entire podcast, TFL Talking Trucks, about it?
Which I think is necessary because it's a topic that I'm not sure we can cover in a short span.
Yeah, but I actually, so I want to do multiple things. But on this particular episode, by the way, thank you, Ian Mills. Ian Mills emailed us. We have his email right here. I mean, it was fairly nice and beefy.
Yeah. Well, and what he said was, it seems whenever you guys talk about price in a video, the general sentiment, especially in the comments, is that trucks are ridiculously expensive nowadays, and it's a sign that manufacturers are being greedy and jacking up prices for no reason. But interestingly enough, Ian is actually an economist. And so he was wondering if that's really the truth of the matter, if that's what's causing these prices to hike up.
Exactly. And so we decided to discuss many things. So I want to look at GM, Ford, and Dodge Ram. We just want to focus on American Big Three, basically.
Yeah.
It's not that we don't care about other manufacturers. Is I think we can look at history of trucks and kind of like talk about this. And Ian's truck is actually a 2005 Silverado 1500 crew cab 4x4 short bed D71.
Yeah, and he said with that towing package and all his options, it had an MSRP of around $35,535 back in 2005. And he said that accounting for inflation, and we will pull up a little later on an inflation calculator and look at a few different trucks, but he said accounting for inflation that his $35,000 truck in 2005 would be about $57,000 today.
Exactly. So yeah, I want to explore the subject. Are manufacturers getting greedy? I mean, are they kind of like, you know, giving us some bells and whistles and then just jacking up prices, you know, really through the roof? Or is there something else going on? And yeah, we just want to see capability. I want to discuss all of that stuff. Capability, efficiency, and the rest.
Yeah, because it's not only prices that are going up. Like you're saying, it is horsepower that's going up. It's oftentimes fuel economy that's going up. Features, towing capacity, payload, everything is getting better as these trucks develop. So I think it's a topic that's got a lot of layers that we got to dig into.
All right, so let's look at, well, we're kind of looking 20 years back, a little bit maybe 25 years back,
yeah,
and comparing it to today. So let's take a look at actually Dodge, because before 2008, they were called Dodge Rams, right?
Yeah, so like my truck, like my second gen.
Yeah.
This, what we're looking at now, is from an era when it was actually the Dodge Ram, so it said Dodge on the steering wheel and everything. And this specifically is a 2002 Cummins that sold on Bring a Trailer. It had 69 miles on the clock.
Wait, so, what?
Yeah, so basically brand new,
okay,
as you can tell by looking at the picture. So this truck went for a pretty penny. This was not inexpensive. But if we look at the next slide, we can actually see the build sheet for this truck. And this is where it's kind of interesting. So initially, you see that the total price is about $38,000.
Wait, for a Cummins diesel?
I know.
$2,500?
Which doesn't sound that expensive by today's standards, especially you look at the base price, $226. Sounds really cheap. And if you even dig into some of the specific options there on the spec sheet, $5,225 for the diesel option, whereas with the new generation of Cummins trucks that are going to be coming out for next year or this year, next model year, that Cummins option is going to be $12,000.
$12,595. So $12,006.
It's also funny to look to the right. There's a little box labeled performance levels. And it says 245 horsepower, 505 pound-feet of torque. 505 pound-feet of torque is not bad, but wow. 245 horsepower by today's standards. That really doesn't sound like a lot,
does it? That's kind of like a Civic, almost like a Honda Civic, maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
No.
A sporty Civic.
So, can you, Cole, can you bring back the picture of the Dodge Ram 2500 here? I want to talk about purpose of a truck, right?
Yeah.
So, this is looking back, what, 23 years into the past. Actually, not that long ago. In the big scheme of things. And this is not a crew cab, right? It's an extended cab. It was really difficult to configure a crew cab. I mean, some of the bigger trucks, you know, offer it for
some other brands, yeah.
But not particular like a Dodge Ram in this particular generation.
Yeah, I think there was a third party that did make some
like
a couple
an extended,
four-door
yeah.
second gens, but
exactly. So I want to talk about purpose of a vehicle first. This, even though this is a sport package truck, which looks really amazing and monochromatic, but the purpose of this particular truck was more work, right? And less fun, less family-friendly daily driver, and more like work capability, fuel efficiency on the highway, simplicity. Those were primary objectives of this vehicle, right?
Yeah, and this is
Would you
getting...
agree?
For sure. I mean, this is getting into the era where these trucks were getting more comfortable, more heavily featured, and more daily drivable. But the purpose of this truck, to your point, was not really to take the place of the family sedan. It was definitely still intended to link up to a trailer and primarily pull.
Exactly. Or maybe load up the bed with, you know, construction equipment or, you know, compressors or whatnot and actually go out and do some work.
Yeah.
But that perception has changed, right, heavily over the last 20 years. If we look at brand new, if we pull up like 2025 configurator, for example, for a brand new Ram truck, the most popular trucks you will see on a daily basis are really crew cabs.
Absolutely, and they're the biggest volume by far in any brand new truck these days. We all know, you look out your window, you see what trucks are out there on the street, it's 98%, 99% crew cabs, maybe?
Yeah, but I mean, in heavy-duty commercial segments, you'll still see some two doors running around.
Work trucks, specifically work trucks.
Yeah, but if we're talking about a little bit nicer equipped vehicles, you generally see crew cabs. Four full-size doors and, you know, pretty sizable beds. And I think that's partially why, because the popularity of those trucks increased. Mm-hmm. And they're bigger, they're heavier, they're nicer. And I think that's one of the elements that's driving the price up.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I do think that it's worthwhile to pull up the inflation calculator and see what about $38,000 from 2002 would be in today's money, because I think that it's actually going to be closer to some of today's pricing than we might expect. So $38,000 in 2002 is almost 70 grand, about 68,000
in today's money.
In today's money. The sport package Ram 2500, that second gen 02 that we were looking at, was a pretty heavily optioned truck.
Yeah.
Sport package and limited slip and all different options and the Cummins. And I believe a manual transmission. But if we go to the new build and price on a Ram, so if we look, you know, 68.
How about Laramie? Can we build the Laramie?
Yeah, so if we do a 4x4 Laramie
crew cab.
Yeah, crew cab is the right way to do it. So already
let's get the diesel in there. Let's get a diesel in there.
Yeah, that's going to crank up the price a little bit.
That's going to pick up a price by about $12,600.
Yeah.
So if you scroll down, keep going a little bit more. Gosh, where is that diesel? It's still coming. There it is.
There we go.
If you select a diesel, $12,595. So our price just went to 80 grand.
Yeah. So, you know, it's funny. You initially look at the configurator and think, well, you know, $68,000 in 2002, and that kind of seems to put you midway up the Ram lineup in today's money until you spec even just that one expensive option. of the new Cummins. Now, previously, the Cummins option was not as expensive as it is for this new generation of trucks.
Yeah, but we got to talk emissions now.
Yeah.
So that's kind of next on my list. We're looking at the brand new high output 6.7 liter Cummins in this particular case that does cost $12,600 for this upcoming year. But now we're talking about DPF system, DEF system, the latest emissions, and they're getting more and more stringent, it seems, every single year.
Yeah.
Right?
It's a lot of systems that second gens didn't have to have. It's a lot fewer components. And two, if we look at the page right here, it shows you 430 horsepower, 1,075 pound-feet of torque for the Cummins option today. On that second gen, 245 horsepower and 505 pound-feet of torque. So less than half the torque that you get from the new 6.7. The other thing, too, that I think is kind of interesting is if you adjust for inflation, that $5,200 Cummins option on the second gen, mm-hmm. that would equate to about $9,000, if I remember right, today's money.
Mm-hmm.
So 12.5, that's a lot more.
There's a gap there.
That's a lot more than $9,000.
Yeah.
But you're also not getting a 245 horsepower diesel engine. And if you're into older trucks like I am with my second gen, I've done some performance upgrades to my motor. And if I could have 430 horsepower and 1,075 pound feet of torque instead of 245 horsepower and 505 pound feet of torque for the additional cost of $3,600.
That sounds like a good deal now.
That wouldn't be a bad deal.
Yeah.
So this is a more expensive Cummins option than it was back in the day, but look at the difference in power output. And then, like you mentioned, all the additional emissions equipment on top of that that they didn't have to contend with as much back in the day.
And also you're getting, in this case of Ram, the new one, 2025 model, you're also getting a state-of-the-art 8-speed automatic transmission made by ZEF, one of the top, you know, prestigious manufacturers of transmissions. I mean, they're highly regarded. So you're getting all that, but you're paying $80,000, at least for a Laramie in this case, for a crew cab Laramie.
And there's no way around it. That is a huge price tag. It's a tough pill to swallow, but I think we got to try and play devil's advocate, and rather than just revel in how big the price tag is, we got to try and at least apply some logic to why.
Yes.
Which is, I think, what we're doing. So we're not trying to advocate for these high prices or anything. We're not trying to excuse it or anything, but more so just trying to explain why we think it is such.
Exactly. And I think a lot of the comments on our videos really come from people's salaries too.
Yeah.
Right? If we're talking about 2002 salary versus 2025 salary, it probably did not increase in the same way that we saw the inflation increase, right?
Yeah, exactly. Have wages kept up with inflation? That's a whole other topic of discussion.
And we're not experts in that.
Yeah, unlike our viewer Ian Mills, who reached out to us, we aren't economists. So we're not really in a position to speak on that. But in this video, what we do want to do in this podcast is talk about, have truck prices increased primarily because of inflation, plus you know, some increases in performance and technology and capability and everything else that we're discussing here.
All right. So let's go back quickly to Ian's truck, that Chevy.
Yeah.
Which is a 2005. I looked up online its capability. So back in the day, 2005, it wasn't super easy. You know how now GM trucks have little stickers in the door that kind of tell you how much it can tow for that configuration and the payload. It wasn't that easy back in the day.
Yeah.
So if you wanted to really know your precise capability of your truck, you're kind of guessing. But I looked it up, and for Ian's truck in 2005, it was rated somewhere between 7,500 pounds of maximum towing to about 8,500 pounds, depending on the engine and the rear axle ratio. These numbers, 7,500 pounds, it's basically what a Chevy Colorado can pull now.
Yeah, yeah. Some midsizers are coming up on those numbers in today's trucks, which is impressive.
And a Silverado 1500 these days, some of the configurations can be rated up to about 13,000 pounds of that. Not that we would recommend pulling 13,000 pounds with your Silverado 1500, but that's where the ratings are.
Exactly. For the best spec'd 1500 that you can spec for pulling a trailer, that's as high as those numbers potentially get, which is impressive because my second gen is rated around 12.
Exactly. So, you know, frames got stronger, brakes got stronger, cooling, radiators, all that stuff got better. So that's how, you know, the progression of the capability of the truck, right?
Yeah.
So it's not just that, oh, somebody sprinkled some magic dust on the truck and all of a sudden it can pull more weight. By the way, they're using SAE J2807 standards now a little bit more closely than before.
Yeah.
So everybody's kind of agreeing on the same standard. Everybody's testing their trucks to the same standard. And actually, you and I don't know if we can talk about this because it's under embargo, but we are going to go to Davis Dam soon.
For reasons that will be found out
soon
enough.
But Davis Dam is one of the major tests that manufacturers do for towing capability.
Running an online business is hard enough without the stress and time consumption of managing hosting. Whether managing one WordPress site or dozens, Kinsta's managed solutions offer speed, enterprise-grade security, and an intuitive dashboard. With 24/7, 365 human-only expert support, get peace of mind that your sites stay online, secure, and performing their best. Start today and get your first month free with migrations handled for you. Learn more at kinsta.com/podcast. That's KINSTA.com/podcast.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always on the verge of death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
Yeah, and it's actually not a place that we've gotten to visit. We have our own towing test that we do up here in the mountains in Colorado, the Ike Gauntlet, obviously. But getting to go do one of the main tests that manufacturers do for tow ratings, Davis Dam, is going to be really cool. That's something we're looking forward to. Video is going to be coming out on that in the next couple months.
In like late March, we'll have some videos about that. So that's really exciting. So capability is increasing, right? So you can do more work with your truck. So yes, you're paying a lot more money for that Silverado or, you know, whatever truck you're talking about. But now you can do a little bit more work with it as well.
Yeah, exactly. And quite a bit more in some cases. Again, some of these tow ratings and payload figures are going up in a pretty huge way. Now, I know you've got a couple other things here on your list that you want to talk about, and we have a couple other vehicles pulled up.
Yeah, well, let's go to Ford, really quick. So I found, once again, we tend to go to like auction sites. Mm-hmm. Once again, this is Bring a Trailer. I also sometimes visit carsandbids. .com. But we found this 2004 Ford F-150 Lariat Super Cruise, so a crew cab with four doors, 4x4 in a very nice condition. And this has a sticker associated with it. So if we look at how much this truck used to cost in 2004, which is about 21 years ago, this particular Ford had an MSRP of $40,240.
Yeah. And if we go over to our inflation calculator, from 2004, $40,000. To whatever that is in today's money, then we can also pull up Ford's configurator and we can see
what that is.
How those things pair. So,
$68,000.
Once again, $68,000. So that's what we have to shop with on Ford's build and price tool here.
So once again, we need Super Crew. So we need a crew cab. We need a Lariat because we're looking at the Lariat. And it starts, according to this, at $63,000 with a V8. Is that a two-wheel drive? Cole, can you double-check if that's a two-wheel drive truck? Scroll down just a little bit.
No, that's four-wheel drive.
It's four-wheel drive.
Yeah, so V8, four-wheel drive, 10-speed transmission. So far, we're at 66. Obviously, we haven't selected any additional options. There's quite a few things that we could. Like that.
Like a Lariat High Package for $7,700?
Yeah, which...
Heads-up display. So now we can talk about bells and whistles. Right.
Exactly.
Heads-up displays, massaging seats, heated seats. Do we need all that stuff?
Not necessarily. And I can tell you, beyond a shadow of a doubt, as basic as this truck without any of these extra, you know, 501A, 502A equipment groups that you can get for them, this truck in its base form as we currently see it, four-wheel drive, V8, and as basic as this interior on this truck would be compared to what you can spec mm-hmm. on a nicer trim level with more of those equipment groups, this is a much nicer truck than that 2004.
Yeah, that 2004 truck also had a V8, different V8, but it didn't have 400 horsepower. It wasn't accelerating with the performance of this new one because the 10-speed automatic gives you a lot more ratios.
Yeah.
And also the new EcoBoost engines. I mean, my gosh, they're super smooth, very, very powerful, including the hybrids that they have, that they offer with F-150s. So the driving experience is really, really different between the two trucks.
Yeah, so it's kind of an interesting split because on some trucks like the Cummins that we initially pulled up, that truck was quite a bit more luxurious than the earlier truck, the 2002 we were comparing it to, because the 2002 was still just an extended cab. It was a relatively basic truck with a manual transmission, nicely optioned for the day, but compared to the new Ram that we were speccing, that new Ram is four-door, and it's got a lot more features, so that Ram was quite a bit more expensive. But when we're looking at something like this F-150, price-wise, it's actually not...
It's near inflation,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, it's actually not that far off, I wouldn't say.
But we have to bring something else up, right? So safety.
Yeah.
Safety. So safety is driven by many things. There's Insurance Institute for Highway Safety. They do their own crash testing and their own evaluations. There's also, we got our lights in the studio back. There's also the government, NHTSA. They do ratings and checks, and they also check the fuel efficiency ratings, you know, with the EPA, right? So talk about safety. It's becoming more and more popular, important to everybody because the speeds are increasing, right? On our highways, there's speed limits between 75 and 80 and 85 in some states. Speeds are increasing. The vehicles are getting heavier, let's be honest, because they are getting nicer. Panoramic sunroofs, you know, leather seats, massaging seats, everything is getting heavier.
And you could definitely argue, I'm not sure it's controversial to argue that people are getting more distracted too.
Yes, and I'm getting heavier too. But safety is expensive.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at some of those crash tests that IIHS does, you know, they look at offset tests, you know, where you're hitting with like your headlight area.
Yeah, the small overlap.
There's the additional frame components that you have to put on the vehicle so the wheel doesn't kind of enter into the passenger compartment and crush your legs.
Yeah.
Right. There's airbags. There is sensors. All of that adds cost, but it also adds safety.
Yeah, it does.
So, yeah.
Which is definitely an important thing because it's interesting if you go online and I'm trying to remember, I think it was maybe the NHTSA's 50th anniversary or something. They did a video where they had two Chevy sedans 50 years apart.
I remember this. Maybe Cole can pull this up on YouTube while we're talking. It's IIHS.
Oh, is it? Yeah, okay.
YouTube.
Yeah, so IIHS.
I remember this. Yes.
Maybe if you type in anniversary crash test, it's a pretty startling difference, especially so myself and Tommy and a few of us here at the office love vintage vehicles. We drive them all the time. Yeah, that one. And seeing the difference in safety between, this is a 1959 Bel Air compared to a 2009 Chevy Malibu, and the difference of what happens
to an older
to the passengers is striking.
Yeah.
So when you look at an older vehicle and you see this thick sheet steel and you think, oh, you know, you could crash this and the car wouldn't even feel it.
That's not necessarily true.
Yeah.
If you're watching this, it's a little bit disturbing, actually.
They're
just test dummies in there, but it's still quite disturbing.
So even in a bigger vehicle, like a lot of the trucks that we're discussing, these safety features that have developed over time are still pretty important because some of these older vehicles and their lack of those features.
The steering column went through this dummy's head. I mean, not through, but not, into.
Yeah, yeah. Versus Jeez. In the brand new car looks borderline comfortable. So it's
a huge difference.
It is a huge difference. Yeah. And that is worth some amount of money, or at least should be to most people.
Exactly. And yeah, so that's a big thing, like emissions regulations and crash regulations. And it is heavily regulated. Both of those are heavily regulated. That drives cost.
Yeah.
Because it drives complexity. But manufacturers, and now we're talking across the board. I mean, I want to bring in Toyota into this discussion because they're one of the largest by volume.
I thought we were focusing on the big three, Andre. You said
no. Let's take a global approach, just for a second.
Okay.
Right. Toyota. I saw a piece of data. Toyota sold over 10 million vehicles last year, yeah. Globally, not just the United States. Globally. And they have economies of scale, right?
Yeah.
Now they're sharing components between vehicles sold overseas, Europe and Asia and Australia, with the components they sold here. So now they're have purchasing power. You know, they can, you know, purchase all of these components, airbags, different switches and the screens. So now they can save money, right? Because they're building 10 million vehicles a year, if not more, maybe 11 million. Let's take, you know, Toyota, for example. And then the question is, are they passing those savings on to us, or are they not? And that goes for Ford as well. I mean, Ford built, 750,000 F-Series trucks last year? That's a lot of vehicles.
That is. Those are huge production numbers. Yeah, and you would hope that scaling that does make some of those features a little bit more affordable. I think it's definitely possible that it does. Obviously, we don't really get a peek behind the curtain of how exactly they structure the cost of what they're building and putting into these vehicles. But I think it's possible that we are seeing some of those savings on the consumer end of things, just given the fact that, like we were looking at with the F-150, a 2004 to a brand new F-150, the prices can be fairly equivalent. I think one of the things that dictates whether, like with the Cummins or with this F-150, I think one of the differences that dictates whether we see those prices increase massively or not. With the Cummins, it increased massively because we were also, the 2002, that was a highly optioned truck. So we were kind of specking a more highly optioned truck in the new one as well. With the Ford, we went a little bit more basic because even though we're not looking at quite as high end of a trim as the older truck, you're still getting more features. So I guess it depends on how you want to make it equivalent. You know, a second gen Laramie to a brand new Laramie, the brand new Laramie might be a lot more expensive. But if you're looking for a truck that offers you just four-wheel drive and four doors in something like an F-150, then adjusted for inflation, you can get a brand new truck for a similar amount, which, again, that might mean that some of those additional features that we're getting that are just baked into even the most basic trucks as far as safety and fuel economy and capability, we might actually be seeing some of those savings from that economy of scale.
Yeah, but if you, Cole, if you go back to the F-150 or the Ford configurator, I've noticed recently, and this happened like several years back, and specifically was very visible. If you can scroll down to like that Lariat luxury package, I've noticed that they're bundling features together in a way that I may not like myself, or some other people may not like. So not just Ford is guilty of this. Ram and GM and others are guilty of this, and also Toyota and Nissan, if we're talking about pickup trucks, where, and I'm saying guilty of this, is because like if you wanted to buy a sunroof, all of a sudden you have to buy something else, maybe a leather seat to go along with it. But like, I don't want leather seats. I want a sunroof.
Yeah.
Why can't I buy a sunroof?
Say you just want heated seats and it might be part of an equipment group or package that costs $7,000.
Yeah. So that's grand. That's where that makes me unhappy.
Yeah.
Like some of the other stuff, you know, the better performance, better towing, acceleration, better safety. Those are great things. But now we're getting into like, I don't know, maybe bean counters or whoever deciding like which packages or equipment groups I need to buy.
Yeah, and you can't necessarily pick and choose, which is frustrating because there's, for most people, probably some features you want and some that you don't.
And for some of it, and I talked to several manufacturers about this, they also say that before there was like 2 million configuration options for an F-150.
Yeah.
And it would be overwhelming. Can you imagine walking into a dealership and ordering a truck? Let's say you know, you saved up your money, you're going in to order your truck, and now you have to look at 2,000 options. That could be really overwhelming. So I think some manufacturers try to bundle them together, like the FX4 off-road package, for example. It's at the bottom of the screen. It's about $1,100, but it combines a rear locking differential with some skid plates. And that's easy to understand,
yeah.
Right? That's
yeah.
Like, okay. That's,
those all make sense together.
Yeah, exactly. But like some of the stuff doesn't really make sense. Like if you want to upgrade your engine and all of a sudden you have to buy something else.
No, yeah.
Why? Why do I have to buy something else?
Yeah, but it is a good point that you bring up, that production line, if you were to able to specifically choose each individual option for a vehicle that has as high of a production number as a Ford F-150, the amount of trucks that they're pumping out every year to make that feasible, there's probably some degree to which they kind of have to bundle things together.
Or control complexity.
Exactly.
That's what they're doing. Yes.
Yeah. And again, I mean, not that we're trying to advocate for high prices or anything.
We don't work for Ford or GM or Ram.
But typically there is a reason for why things are the way they are, and we're kind of trying to nail down what that is.
Exactly. I want to touch on efficiency. We haven't spoken very much about this yet, but MPG, right? Efficiency of your pickup truck.
The Christ Hospital Health Network and Premier Health, named top hospitals in Cincinnati and Dayton by U.S. News, have joined forces to deliver specialized cardiovascular care to the community. This partnership gives you access to leading experts and advanced treatments for complex heart conditions close to home. With expanded services and cutting-edge technology, we're doing everything it takes to provide world-class heart and vascular care together. Learn more at premierhealth.com/together.
And this is a controversial one for me because I would argue, and I think maybe we need to do more testing on this. Remember we had the OBS Ford diesel, the Power 7.3, Stroke?
Yep.
The 7.3. We did a little bit of testing with that, old truck versus new truck. And the difference is actually not that stark. It's almost similar efficiency sometimes. You can find an older vehicle, like a 20 or 30-year-old vehicle, a pickup truck, with efficiencies that are similar to a brand new one. And I think it has to do with weight. The new vehicles are much heavier. They're much taller, actually, and more aggressive tires. Off-roading is very popular these days. So giant tires, all-terrain, mud-terrain tires are. So I'm not sure if we made those advancements in efficiency that I would like to see.
Yeah, and it depends because you look at a truck like the Ford Maverick now that exists, that didn't exist before. And that is a truck that, at least theoretically, but especially in the city, can mm-hmm. get really amazing MPG.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's something that didn't exist before. So in a way, there are truck options out there that do afford you really good MPG.
Well, wait a minute. What if you went to like 1985 and found a Ranger?
Some of the mini trucks?
Yeah. Found a Ranger. I mean, I'm not saying that a 1985 Ranger would get 40 MPG. But it could come close, maybe. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, because maybe closer than you might expect.
Because those things were so tiny.
And underpowered.
And underpowered. That, yeah. You see what I'm saying? Like, but so I don't know if like apple for apple, if we actually solved the efficiency game. I'm not sure that we did.
That's fair. Aerodynamics has definitely improved in a lot of ways. The science of it has improved.
Yeah, definitely.
But to your point, there are a lot of trucks nowadays that have bigger front ends, grills, hoods, bumpers, and everything than ever. And they are also heavier than they used to be. So yeah, I'm with you. I'm not sure that MPG has, I don't think across the board it's gotten markedly better.
Yeah, and that's an interesting question. And I mean, I guess... Gosh, you could bring in electricity into this equation. But I don't know. It's complicated, right? Because electric pickup trucks versus internal combustion pickup trucks, there is no price parity yet. So like if you configured an F-150 Lightning in a similar way to an F-150 base vehicle, internal combustion vehicle, the electric vehicle still costs more because those the battery technology costs more. And even though overall that electricity is more efficient to move that vehicle on the highway, I don't think we won that game either.
Yeah.
There's still a lot of technology to be decided there.
But there is certainly and arguably a broader spectrum of powertrain options out there from instead of just being gas and diesel, there's gas, diesel, mild hybrid, plug-in hybrid, full electric.
Or turbocharging.
Yes. Yeah,
whichever way you want to go.
There's, naturally aspirated or turbocharged. So there are quite a few options, extra options out there as far as type of powertrain.
Exactly, which is a good thing.
Yeah, for sure.
A good thing. I want to talk about off-road ability or capability because we talk about like Raptor trucks, TRXs, RHOs, AT4Xs.
Right. Yeah.
These trucks, I would say that drives the price way up. Like, for example, we went to the Ford dealership and we saw two F-150 Raptors there, EcoBoost powered V6 trucks. And they were priced at $94,000 a piece.
Yeah.
Whew. Now that you could argue, there's a couple things going on there. First of all, the technology in those trucks is expensive. You know, live suspension, adjustable shocks. We're talking about, fancy engines. Once again, high output
35s or 37s.
37s, 35s. But it's also the popularity. As soon as something becomes popular, like your cup of coffee at your favorite fancy coffee shop, as soon as that becomes popular, there's a market force at play, right? And then the price goes up.
But we've certainly had, I would call it a bit of a golden age of off-road trucks in the last 10, 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
Because between the Raptors, the TRX, now RHO,
DR2s, that stuff.
We've had quite a few really impressively capable pickup trucks, even Gladiator. There's been several midsizers that are good. I mean, the midsize ZR2s as well.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the Ranger Raptor.
We're talking about triple locked vehicles, front lockers, rear lockers, center lockers.
Power wagon.
Winches from the factory.
Mm-hmm.
You could buy a truck with a winch from the factory.
Now, all that stuff is expensive. It's expensive in the aftermarket too. I'm building a 4x4 right now and it's spiraled out of control because of the off-road parts. Off-road parts are pricey.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think we have more capable off-road trucks now than now being, the last 5-10 years than at any point in the past, just because of all these extra features, like you said, the lockers and the winches and long travel suspension. That didn't used to be an option. Trucks that come with extensive skid plating from the factory, like some of the AT4X AEV edition trucks.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's a really cool thing, but that is also going to drive price up. There's no way around that.
Yeah, and you could argue, the person who buys a Sierra AT4X AEV edition, are they going to go off-road? Or is it just something
I've seen it.
Yes, I've seen it too. But you could argue, or is it just kind of a statement about their aspirations or their status, right? Is that you could argue, which way do you want to go? And I want to talk a little bit about GMC because you and I recently, we had the Yukon 84 Ultimate Edition here as a loan vehicle. And I was talking to my friend John. John, you met John. He just bought a Tahoe Z71.
Yeah, absolutely.
So John and I were having a conversation. He has a Tahoe Z71. He purchased it for around, $72,000, with some options. The 84 Yukon Ultimate has a price tag of $102,000.
Which is an eye-watering number.
So where is the $30,000 difference? How do you reconcile that?
Yeah, and that is a tough thing because, another thing that's worth mentioning is it does seem like this most most recent crop of trucks and SUVs have had another significant price hike versus some of the things that were updated maybe a year or 2 years ago. I think those prices are a little bit more under control and in line with inflation, which is maybe another reason, again, that we saw that Ram was so much more expensive than the old truck. Same thing with your buddy's Tahoe Z71 was what year?
Oh, the one we reviewed?
Yeah. Well, that was the new one.
Yeah, right? It was a 2025. Yeah, we have it on the screen if you guys are watching us on TFL Talk.
Yeah, so that actually wasn't the old generation. So that is a good point.
No. Yeah, so here's one thing that came to my mind when I was talking to John about this too. Is first of all, Chevrolet versus GMC brand. If you look at specifically, you know, Tahoe versus Yukon or even Colorado versus GMC Canyon, there is a price for that badge.
Yeah.
When you buy a GMC badge or when you're looking at the GMC badge, there is already a premium. And I've seen it, you know, $5,000, sometimes $6,000, you know, comparable configurations of vehicles. And I think it's just brand loyalty at that point. I mean,
that's a lot of brand loyalty, $30,000 worth.
Well, I haven't accounted for all of it yet. I'm just accounting.
Yeah, you're working toward it.
I'm working.
Right on.
I'm working. So far, I got to like $6,000 or $7,000 out of that 30, and that's just the brand. So that's hard to understand, but you have to think about like premium watch versus basic watch, premium shoe versus basic shoe, like. Some brands have really value, you know, brand value that goes along with it.
Even if they're the same thing.
Well, you just recently bought really nice boots, right?
Yeah, but that's because they last a long time. It's an investment. Yeah,
exactly. So when you're buying a GMC Yukon or a Chevy Tahoe, they probably will last similar amounts.
To right? My Red Wings? Yeah.
You bought Red Wings.
At least. I hope. It better last as long, Andre.
No, but I'm saying, like, if you buy a Lexus SUV...
It's $71,000 already.
Oh, jeez. Oh, by the way, let's take the Yukon off the table for just a second. We had a 1998 Tahoe, red one, that my dad bought, actually, from the company. That's, what, 27 years ago?
Yep.
This has a sticker. I think we have a sticker of $37,244 for this 1998 four-door, four-wheel drive Z71 Tahoe.
Yeah, and this was a nicely optioned Tahoe in its day. It had four-wheel drive auto. It had quite a few pretty nice features. So $37,000
in 1998 is going to be... Drum roll. In today's money...
73, woo!
Wow, okay. That's a lot of money. 73,000 today's dollars.
So now on the configurator, we're looking at a Tahoe that is also a Z71. And
$71,000.
Yeah, the basic truck is $71,000.
So, hey, that's a deal. So,
once again, I mean,
No.
It always surprises me a little bit, at least at times, how much some of these prices are actually in line with what they used to be and then adjusted for inflation. It depends, not in every single case. And yeah, I think it depends on, again, what do you call an equivalent truck, because the trim structures and features and everything change a little bit over time.
But it's still, I mean, the new Tahoe, that 98 Tahoe actually is a two row. Yeah. It doesn't have a third row seat.
Yeah, that one's a three row.
The new Tahoe has a third row. Actually,
it's got red tow hooks.
Oh, that's worth something.
Which is a big deal.
That's worth something. So once again, I think a lot of the same things are true that we already discussed. Purpose is the same, 98 to now. I think it's to carry your family.
The use case, for sure.
The use case is the same. Emissions have improved.
Yep.
MPG, well, I'm not so sure. You know, it's similar, probably.
I mean, from what? From a 4L60, so a four-speed transmission to a 10-speed. It should be a little bit better.
It should be a little bit better. A safety improved dramatically,
yeah,
I would say.
Massively.
Capability? Well, the new Tahoe tows about, 8,000 pounds? And the old one towed
The old one was 6,500, if I remember right. It was a while ago that we owned the truck, but I want to say.
Yeah, so the capability improved
Considerably.
Off-roadability?
I mean, it was a G80.
G80 rear axle before.
Yeah.
And we have a limited slip potentially as an option on the new Tahoe.
Yeah. So the new Tahoe, especially if you were to spec one of these new GM SUVs with air suspension, you could probably get a little extra height. Red tow hooks.
Maybe better tire technology.
Yeah, I mean, probably tire technology a better traction control.
But you can put new tires on an old truck.
You probably should. Yeah, I'd say better traction control.
Exactly.
Probably worse sight lines, but more cameras.
Way more cameras.
Yeah, GM does lots of cameras.
I think in 98, that truck had zero cameras, actually.
Yeah, other than the ones we bring with us on a shoot.
Exactly. So inflation, it seems like we're still within inflation here.
Yeah.
So that's quite impressive for the Tahoe. But we still haven't gotten to 102,000. So how do we get to 102,000 on the Yukon 84 Ultimate? And I think the point I'm trying to make is that certain brands have value.
Yeah.
Like a premium energy drink is more expensive versus kind of a basic one. You see what I'm saying?
Am I making any sense? But GM, no, you are. But GMC versus Chevy, to me, that brand value difference, and this is just in my brain at least, so sure, feel free to disagree, but GM from Chevy to GMC jump is not the same as from Chevy to a Cadillac jump. So an Escalade for $102,000 is well out of my range, but I could understand why someone would spend $100,000 on a really nice Escalade.
Okay.
And it's not to say that
GMC... But in your mind,
the
GMC hasn't reached that status. Because you see a GMC is just a slightly nicer Chevy. That's what you're saying.
As far as brand value, the actual vehicle itself, the GMC, that AT4 Ultimate that we were driving, was a really nice vehicle. Great materials, a lot of technology, a lot of features, even had a night vision camera built into the cluster, huge screens, heated and cooled seats and everything all over the place, and massaging
massage
seats.
Yeah.
So it's got the features. It's got the things that I would expect. But if a big part of that price difference is coming down to brand value, I don't know, for me.
Definitely, it's person dependent.
Yeah,
it depends
100%.
On the person. So if you, I don't know, if you've bought GMCs in the past and you really associate with that brand, maybe you have a different perspective than not. And I mean, your family has owned GMCs before.
Yeah, my dad had a GMT 800 Yukon Denali. That was an awesome vehicle.
Yeah, exactly.
Kept it for a long time.
Yeah. So it's hard for us to argue. I mean, we're not market research, people. So brand value may mean different things to different people. But what I do like about GMC Yukon, if you look at the new Tahoe interior, and maybe Cole can pull up a little interior tab here on the configurator for us. Now, the Tahoe has horizontal screens.
Yeah.
The GMC Yukon now has a vertical screen. So now when you get into each one, they look dramatically different. And that wasn't the case before.
It is differentiated more.
Yeah.
It's a $30,000 vertical screen.
Wow, that's an expensive screen.
No, it's the truck has got quite a bit more than that going for it.
Exactly. So what do you think Ian would tell us on this show?
Well, him being an economist and me just being a guy.
A truckiest?
Yeah, a guy who likes trucks and has a camera. I can't weigh in so much on, wages and inflation necessarily, other than just the information that we've brought up here.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, one thing that I do want to mention, I think is worth talking about a little bit. Yeah, there's the GMC interior.
Mm-hmm.
So it is different. It looks different from the Chevy. That's not what I want to talk about, though. I think one thing that's worth saying, because I've seen this comment as well, overwhelmingly, like Ian Mills said in his email to us, the general sentiment we see in the comments on our videos is everything today is too expensive. And I can understand why. That's why the newest vehicle I actually own is a 2000 Land Rover, which is as cheap as vehicles get. So I've got older vehicles for that reason. I can understand why so many people are frustrated with the prices on new vehicles.
Exactly.
That being said, on the flip side of things, if you're the type of person out there that has worked your butt off to be able to go buy a GMC Yukon AT4 Ultimate for $102,000, then we're happy for you. We don't want to criticize anyone's decision if they want to spend.
Oh, exactly.
If they want to spend
it's maybe their present to themselves for working really hard.
Yeah.
It's their gift to themselves.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Which is great. And ultimately, the manufacturers generally build these vehicles because there are people out there that are buying them. But kind of the reason for this podcast is talking about the more typical sentiment that we see that vehicle prices are too high.
Yeah, and talking about SUVs, we talked about, you know, the Tahoe, some of the more desirable vehicles, the Yukons. But Cole, I don't know if you can go back to the Chevrolet site for a second and look up a price of a base Chevy Trax.
Yeah, that's true, because those are actually really inexpensive.
Remember, we tested one together. The new Chevy Trax starts at $20,400.
Yeah, and when we initially tested it, when it first came out, it was actually just under $20,000.
Yeah.
So there are some still arguably affordable vehicles out there. Definitely prices are going up, and it's especially noticeable in the truck space, because like when the Ford Maverick first came out, you could get one of those for less than $20,000.
And not anymore.
Now I think the cheapest is around 27.
Exactly.
And if you walk onto a dealer lot, you're not probably going to see a $27,000.
Well, remember, Maverick. We did this just a week ago, and we found a Maverick. The cheapest Maverick we found was 30.
They're staying.
No, this is 2024.
Ah.
You have to go to 2020. See, that's how they get you. That's how they get you.
They get you in the door, and then the price sneaks up.
Yeah, and the cheapest Maverick we saw was 32.
I think I see kind of in the middle of the page.
It's in the middle of the page,
Maverick.
Yeah. Not found. So it's okay. We can't look for a new Maverick. No, that's okay. So, prices are going up, but there's still, I'm just saying, hopefully there's hope. I mean, I don't want this episode to be about, every truck is now 60 grand, so forget about it. That's not the message I want to send.
Yeah.
The message is that, yes, it is $60,000 for a lot of trucks, but safety improved, emissions improved. You can actually smell it. Like when you start a new old Tahoe, you know, on the cold morning.
You smell the safety?
You smell the emissions.
Oh, right. That makes
and
more sense.
When you start a brand new Tahoe, you don't smell as many emissions.
Well, I can confidently say it's the same and even more so with my second Tahoe. My 94 is pre-emissions. Cole running the podcast is laughing because he's been in the parking lot plenty of times when I was starting up my truck.
And you could tell it started. You could hear it from a block away. You could smell it from a block away.
You can feel it through the walls.
You could feel it through the wall of the building sometimes, yes. And the new Ram Cummins is more refined. It's quieter. It may not be as smelly as before. So there's a lot of good things that have happened over the last 20 years plus. It's just that the price.
You don't like loud and smelly trucks?
Well, sometimes I do.
Yeah.
Sometimes I do. But I don't know if everybody wants, you know, a loud and smelly truck every single day.
That's fair. Probably the smart people out there. myself.
You know what else was a little bit smelly? I recently drove a Sherp. A Sherp all-terrain vehicle. Yeah.
Which those are very interesting vehicles. What's the tire size?
It's rolling on 70s.
70s, which is
so
big enough.
You thought your 35s were big enough?
I never did, but especially not now.
So, we talk about 35, 37-inch tall tires. The Sherp is an all-terrain vehicle that's not street legal, by the way.
Yeah.
So that has a big hit against it.
I don't think there's anything on 70-inch tires that is street legal.
We recently have a video. It's on TFL Off-Road Channel. I recently... Boss and Vlad came over. They just opened a dealership, a Sherp dealership in Denver. So up to now in Colorado, you really didn't have a place to service or a purchase a Sherp vehicle. But dude, just really quick, as we close this out, this design is so unique. So it has to do with the tires, of course, but it's also an amphibious vehicle. It floats and goes in water.
The tires are so big it floats. Can't you put fuel in the wheels too?
Exactly. So the rim diameter, the wheel diameter the rim itself is a 25-inch rim, so 25s. But in the middle,
big,
in the middle of that, it's a fuel tank. So you could put up to 15 gallons into each wheel. So you have 15 gallons of fuel in each wheel, plus a 25-gallon tank in the center of the vehicle. So you have about 85 gallons of fuel. So you could run it for about 3 days nonstop without shutting down the engine.
Which is pretty cool. It does come at a price, though.
We're talking about $150,000 to start.
Yeah.
Depending on the configuration.
I'm not sure how that factors into inflation because I don't know how long the Sherpa has been around for.
A few years.
Yeah.
But this vehicle is nuts. It has CTIS, basically Central Tire Inflation System. It uses exhaust to inflate its tires.
Nice.
So not an exterior, not like a compressor pushing air inside the tires. It's actually using engine exhaust to inflate the tires if you want to inflate them.
Which is cool. So it's pretty rad that you got to check that Sherp out. You also have a little prop at your side.
I do. It's not a Sherp, but it's a Buhanka man.
Look at this. Yeah. Andre, his famous bread loaf van.
It's not miniature.
He has turned into an RC. Which is pretty cool. This is on an Axial SCX-24?
Yeah, it's an SCX-24 chassis.
I'm more of a TRX-4M guy myself. But I don't know why that's funny, Cole.
So as we close out, my Buhanka is now, I don't know if you could see this, but my Buhanka is now a little RC.
Well, and if you're listening, you can maybe hear it because it's right next to the microphones, and it does make a pretty annoying noise, as most do.
But it does have lights.
Yeah, you put a scale model Buhanka van body on a little RC rock crawler chassis. It's awesome.
Yeah.
It's got functional suspension. It's got rubber tires and everything. Solid axles.
Solid axles, front
locked
and rear.
Locked differentials.
Yes, but the tires are a little bit flat. I need to improve it.
It's better than your actual van.
Wow. But I can't go inside of it. Not big enough.
No, but the doors do open, so that's cool.
Yeah, the doors open. So, and it's super heavy. So, on this note, by the way, we're going to be doing more with the Buhanka van. And also David, our friend David, he's also finishing a build on his old truck. So I really want to see his truck. He's building a basically off-road recovery rig, you know, with a crane on the back of it. So it's going to be pretty amazing.
Yeah, and I'm getting bankrupted by a Land Rover. So we've got all kinds of stuff in the pipeline. It's awesome.
So I cannot wait to see your Land Rover on camera either.
Me either. I can't wait to see it out of the garage. It's the world's biggest paperweight right now.
There you go. So on this note, I think we should wrap this up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let us know what you think in the comments below. You know, are they ripping us off? Are the prices really that much higher than they should be? Or is it actually, reasonable for the time?
Yeah, definitely let us know, because I think it's kind of a complicated answer to that question in reality.
Thank you for joining us.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan, additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
The Christ Hospital Health Network and Premier Health, named top hospitals in Cincinnati and Dayton by U.S. News, have joined forces to deliver specialized cardiovascular care to the community. This partnership gives you access to leading experts and advanced treatments for complex heart conditions close to home. With expanded services and cutting-edge technology, we're doing everything it takes to provide world-class heart and vascular care together. Learn more at premierhealth.com/together.